I became aware of what was happening on the Darling Downs with coal and coal seam gas. I mean, I've been aware for a while. Wasn't quite sure what to do about it in the Greens. And so when I looked at it, I thought, you know, this is the most radical transformation of inland Australia, certainly inland Queensland, since the expansion of the pastoral frontier in the 19th century. I mean, that's how incredible it is, what's going on out there. That I had to do something about it. When I say, by the way, the most radical transformation, we're looking at something like 30 open-cut coal mines, including some of the biggest in the world, on the Darling Downs, you know, one of the great food bowls of this country. You know, tens of thousands of coal seam gas wells, and each of those coal seam gas wells, about 750 metres apart, connected by roads and pipelines, with compressor stations, maybe LNG plants, trucks going in and out all the time, a massive imposition on the landscape. So I decided that I would get involved in that campaign. To do that effectively, I needed to get involved with farmers, and to do that, I needed to not be an advocate or a representative of the Greens. So I resigned all my positions in the Greens and just simply went out west as an environmentalist, which was an interesting experience because about 10 years ago, Queensland Country Life, the main newspaper in the western out west, was calling for me to be strung up if I happened to come to town. They blamed me for the tree clearing laws up there. Now they're calling me the saviour of the bush. So you just got to live long enough, really. You can see a world of change. I went from farmhouse to farmhouse, basically, for the first month, and still do to a large extent. But, you know, in the early time, I just went out there to learn what was going on. It was interesting. I went up to one guy's front porch, and he said, "You're Drew Hutton, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, you're the bastard who caused all my problems in the first place." And he meant the tree clearing laws. So I said, "Oh, that mean you don't want to talk to me?" "Oh, no, shit, no, I want to talk to you. Come on in, meet the wife, have a cup of tea. Yeah, let me tell you about these gas companies." So that was more or less the situation. People mightn't have liked me or didn't like the Greens or didn't like environmental organisations per se, but nevertheless recognised that this issue could not be won west of the Great Dividing Range. It couldn't be one without linking up with the urban areas and couldn't be one without linking up with the environment movement. And to do that, I was a very useful conduit between the rural areas and the environment movement generally, and I think I still am. And it's very, you know, it really is, I'm very grateful that at a meeting like this, an issue like the one in Queensland is on the agenda, because I think there are a whole range of reasons why it should be, and if I've got time, I'll go through some of them. We're looking at an industry. Well, coal and coal seam gas both. You can't talk about one without the other. In Queensland, you've got a coal seam, you'll have both coal and coal seam gas. Sometimes you've got them in the same area. Sometimes the same, you know, area will be covered by two different sorts of leases. And sometimes a third one, underground coal gasification, which is hideous. Never should have even got a Guernsey in the first place. But, so all sorts of things are happening up there. If we just look at coal seam gas for a minute, because it's the new kid on the block, the rhetoric from both the coal companies and the Queensland government and the Australian government is that gas is the transition fuel. You know, we're going to get out of coal, and in fact the Queensland government's made a commitment to have no more coal-fired power stations. They're going to have all gas-fired power stations. So we're going to transition to gas, and somehow or other there's going to be another transition along the way into renewables. Well, of course, it's crap. It's complete bullshit, because they're going to go into gas, and that's where it's going to stop. And that's where it'll stop for the next 30 or 40 years. You're going to have all this massive investment in gas-fired power stations, and it's locked in. And the only renewables that are going to happen in Queensland will be frippery on the edges. It'll be public relations exercises for the Premier, who does wonderful public relations exercises. This will be to showcase how seriously they're taking climate change. And of course, the carbon footprint for gas is very, very up for negotiation, very, very up for question. Beyond Zero Emissions is doing some valuable work on this, and I'm looking forward to seeing the results of that. What I suspect will happen from the analysis, which is quite complex, is that it will verify what we see on the ground up there, which is that every gas well leaks. Sooner or later it leaks. Every pipeline leaks. Sometimes they're even meant to leak. You know, a water pipeline, for example, that comes from a gas well will have vents to vent the gas that comes into a water pipeline accidentally. And they flare gas, you know, from a well. Sometimes they flare it and sometimes they just simply vent it. Venting it, of course, is much worse because it's methane that's coming out. So even if the carbon footprint of gas is, say, 75% of what coal is, what's the point? I mean, it might enable a small percentage decrease in our greenhouse gas emissions. It's not going to enable the larger greenhouse gas reductions that we're going to require. Now, when you add to that the ecological footprint, it's hideous. The ecological footprint of coal seam gas is largely to do with what you can't see. What you can see is bad enough. You get in a helicopter and you look down on a gas field and it's hideous. People talk about, you know, it's a sort of benign technology. Well, it's nothing like it. You look down, it's like a pincushion. Every 750 metres, there's a gas well. It can be up to 450 metres if they want to, and that's what it'll come down to. Every 60 acres, there's a gas well in a gas field. Every 60 acres. That makes landowner activity virtually impossible in some areas. I know cockies up there who are going to get anything up to 120 gas wells on their properties, 150 gas wells on their properties. But what's mostly going to happen is the extraction of the water is going to destabilise the whole Great Artesian Basin. Water is going to migrate from areas of high pressure to areas of low pressure. The coal seam is an aquifer. It will be dewatered, depressurised. The water will move from other aquifers over a period of time. And you will get whole sections of the Great Artesian Basin will be damaged for centuries. That's what the experts are telling us. Damaged for centuries. One of the great natural resources of this country is going to be damaged for centuries, up to 1,000 years, by this industry. So what do we do? Well, it's state and federal governments had given their approvals by late last year. At my office out at a little place called Warra, I gathered together all the different farmers, landowners, action groups, along with Friends of the Earth, and we debated what we'd do. We decided on a campaign of civil disobedience. This is farmers' groups. You know, these are people to the right of Genghis Khan. I originally proposed that we call it Shut the Gate. That we call on landowners everywhere not to negotiate with the companies. When they come along, you just simply say, we don't want to talk to you, go away. And that's an act of civil disobedience because the law says you can't. Not with coal or coal seam gas. You have to negotiate with them after 20 days. If you still can't reach an agreement, they can take you to compulsory mediation. If after another 20 days you still can't reach agreement, they can take you to the land court. The minute it goes to the land court, they can come onto your property. The minute it goes to the land court. Not after they make a decision, the minute it goes. So one of the cockies said, Drew, we can't call it Shut the Gate because everyone in the country shuts their gate. They just open it again. So what you've got to do is lock the gate. Okay, it's lock the gate. So we called it Lock the Gate. We're getting signs up all over the place. Somebody puts a Lock the Gate sign on the front of their house, and you know what the companies do? They go to the next fellow. They don't even walk in the property. And we've got guys out there who've had their gates locked for 8 years, you know, even before our campaign even got underway. But now it's underway. We've got hundreds of farmers locking their gates out there. We'll have thousands before too long. I got arrested the other day at the Tara blockade on a Section 805 of the Petroleum and Gas Act, which says you can't obstruct a company from legally conducting its activities without reasonable excuse. Now, my defence will be that it's time up, that it's a reasonable excuse to obstruct because, amongst other things, they're supposed to have 10-metre-wide corridors on this property that we're blockading on. They have 40-metre-wide corridors. That is just an example of what these companies do. They are so arrogant, they are so big, they don't think they can be touched. They think they're in Nigeria, you know, where they shoot locals if they get in the way. Well, they're not shooting cockies up there yet, but they're not far from it. They treat them with complete contempt. And I'm going to go to court and I'm going to win that battle. And if I do, then every landowner in rural Queensland can do exactly the same thing. We will stop these bars. And that's what has to be done in the rest of Australia. People need to lock their gates. It's not a symbolic thing. It's an actual, physical, strategic move. Don't even let them in. Because the governments are completely on their side, oppositions are completely on their side, they will go with where the money is, they will go with where the power is, they'll go with where they see the immediate jobs to be, and these farmers who wouldn't know, you know, which way was up, they're not going to be a problem. Well, they're going to be a problem. This is going to be the biggest social movement in Australia's history.